I am a great fan of true crime. And if you watch the true crime series on Netflix called Dirty John, you'll know the name Christopher Gofford. He's a Los Angeles Times reporter who's reported on the actual story in print, and then he turned it into a podcast series that's been downloaded over 20 million times. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. He knows how to tell one hell of a story, and he's now compiled his favorite stories into a book called Dirty John and other true stories of outlaws and outsiders. One of those stories is being developed into a movie starring Julia Roberts. He's based in Los Angeles, so I caught up with him a little bit earlier in the week, and I started by asking him to just quickly recap the Dirty John plot for those who might not have heard or seen it.
The Dirty John story is about a con man, a veteran criminal named John Meehan, who spends his lifetime preying on vulnerable people, particularly women. He uses the internet and dating services to do so. And one of his final victims is a woman in Newport Beach, California, named Deborah Newell. And he winds up marrying her and meets a violent end at the end of the series. I guess that's the quickest way to summarize it.
And in the podcast, you speak to Deborah Newell. She really narrates throughout the entire podcast series. How did you get somebody like Deborah Newell, who had been duped so badly by this man who she loved, how did you get her to talk to you?
Well, I think she was interested in helping other people with her experience. A lot of people have gone through this sort of experience. I know this because to this day I'm getting emails from around the world from people who talk about their own Dirty John experience or their own equivalent of the Dirty John experience. And since the show's been on Netflix and it's around the world, I'm getting emails from just about everywhere, and there's a similarity to the stories. A lot of people have been victims of guys like John Meehan, and I think Deborah Newell wanted her story to be a cautionary tale, and maybe to embolden other people a little bit to talk about their stories, and maybe not to be quite so ashamed of talking about ways that they had been taken advantage of. I think that was why she wanted to speak about it.
You've taken your in-depth pieces, because certainly you've been a Los Angeles reporter for years. You've taken your in-depth pieces. You've now published them all together in a book called Dirty John and Other Stories of Outlaws and Outsiders. Among those in the book, one of the most fascinating for me was the story of Jill Easter. That's Netflix is now making that into a movie, aren't they, starring Julia Roberts?
Yeah, they're developing the script now, yes. Yes, and that's the story of a case that happened a few years ago in a town in Southern California called Irvine, which is a master planned suburb and likes to call itself the safest mid-sized city in America, a rather affluent area. And the story involves a woman named Kelly Peters, who is a school volunteer. She spends her time volunteering at the school, helping out the kids, and she gets into a conflict with a couple of parents at the school who happen to be lawyers, Kent and Jill Easter, and they decide to wage a campaign to remove her from the school because of what they think was a slight to their son. Apparently, the son had been a little slow to line up after an after-school activity, and the mother, Jill Easter, had reacted to this badly and thought that when Kelly Peters said the boy was slow to line up, she had somehow been implying that he was mentally slow. And I think this was a mishearing, a misunderstanding, but it led to this years-long campaign to oust this volunteer, Kelly Peters, from her role at the school, and it culminated in Kelly Peters being stopped by police one day because an anonymous phone call had alerted local police that there were drugs in Kelly Peters' car. So the police arrived and they searched her car at the school, and they found a bag of painkillers and they found a bag of marijuana in the pouch behind her seat in the car. And they were just about to arrest her when the police realized, maybe we should ask some more questions. Something is not quite right about this. Kelly Peters said, "I have an enemy." And she told them, "The Easters have been after me for some time." And this is the basis of the story. And it runs for 6 parts. Ran a few years ago in the Los Angeles Times. And you can get it in Dirty John and Other True Stories of Outlaws and Outsiders, which, as you said, basically collects my best work, 15 of my best stories from 22 years in the business, mostly at the Los Angeles Times, where I've been doing it for about 12 years, but before that at the St. Petersburg Times also, in St. Petersburg, Florida, where I was before L.A.
You stumble across these stories. I mean, with Dirty John, it was an autopsy report. What was it with the Easter story?
Well, a lot of these stories have been in the news in one form or another. The Easter story had been in the news for years and years, as had many of the other stories that I wrote about. What I do is different, though, from what you typically see in the newspaper. I try to go a little deeper. I wait for the dust to settle. It's not that important to me to be first on breaking these stories. What's important to me is that I get the deeper story and provide the connective tissue between events. People think they understand that they may have seen a story play out in the media in bits and pieces. But if you can wait a few months, sometimes a year or two, people are more inclined to tell you what's behind the story. You may have seen a documentary that came out a couple years ago on the O.J. Simpson case called O.J. Simpson Made in America, which was a very compelling documentary series. And it taught me a lot about a case that I thought that I had known about, but which I really didn't. So that's kind of the model that I follow.
And it really, I mean, your stories really show that behind the facade, certainly John Meehan looks like the perfect man. Jill and Kent Easter look like the perfect parents, look like they have it all. It delves into the personalities behind these people that creates this facade.
Yes, I like to think that one of the ways that my work is different from a lot of so-called true crime reporting is that it dives as deeply as possible into the psychological underpinnings and psychological complexity of what's going on. Yeah.
Is it a lot more complicated than these people are just mentally unhinged?
Well, there are all kinds of factors. I mean, in the case of Dirty John and Deborah Newell, one of the reasons Deborah Newell took him back, even after she realized that John Meehan was a con man with a long criminal record, is that her family put an emphasis on forgiveness. Her sister had been killed years before, and her mother had forgiven the shooter, and Deborah Newell grew up with this idea that the Christian thing to do is to forgive people who have wronged us. And so this is in her mind when John Meehan, her husband, the con man, begs her to take him back, and she does. So I think that the kind of journalism I like to do is the journalism that doesn't present cases with easy answers or black and white solutions, but delves into the gray areas, into the areas of ambiguity and complexity. And I don't like to I like to think that any of the stories in Dirty John and Other True Stories is a mystery that opens you up to questions that lead to deeper and unanswerable mysteries, mostly psychological ones.
taking the time to actually do these stories also allows you to give an update further on. So Deborah Newell now, and also Jill and Kent Easter, what are both of their situations?
I haven't been in touch with any of them for some time. Last I checked on Kent Easter, he had lost his license to practice law in the state of California. I imagine he might be trying to get it back. I don't know. I haven't seen or spoken to Deborah Newell in a while, so I can't really say what she's up to just now. I'm on to my next story.
What's your next story?
Well, I can't talk about it in great detail, but it's right in line with my other work. It involves life and death stakes and very, very strange occurrences. Stay tuned to the Los Angeles Times.
And Chris, now that your work through Netflix as well is reaching a massive audience, certainly Dirty John was already downloaded 20 million times, the podcast. What's the response worldwide? Why do you think people are so fascinated with these true crime stories?
You know, I've heard a number of theories about this. I was talking to a prosecutor just the other day who had a theory about the popularity of true crime. I guess this would apply to America. He said at a time when America seems more fractured and divided than ever politically, true crime and jury duty is what he was talking about, is one place where people can come together and sort of talk about a non-political arena. I think this writer, Megan Abbott, who's a great mystery and crime writer, had a column about true crime and its popularity that really goes to the issue as I see it. And she said that while in America, men are more likely to be homicide victims, women are 70% of victims killed by an intimate partner. And true crime is the place where women can go to read about the dark, messy stuff of their lives that they're not supposed to talk about, like domestic abuse and sexual assault and troubled family lives. And she said true crime is the collective unconscious of so many women. It's the all the taboo topics the culture as a whole represses. And I think she's really onto something. I think that point would go to the fact that true crime is more popular in terms of numbers, I think, with women. But I think with men it also resonates, maybe for similar reasons, because it allows you to explore areas that that are frequently neglected in polite conversation.
That was Christopher Gofford. His podcast is Dirty John. It's really an ode to old-time radio.